From the Credit Union National Association, this is the CUNA News Podcast. Credit Union People, Credit Union Ideas.
Getting the right person in the right job is a deceptively difficult task, one that through time and repetition determines an organization's level of success. I'm Ron Jose, Senior Editor with CUNA News. In this podcast, our latest in a series focusing on service culture, we explore how putting people in the right position should be a deliberate strategy that shapes an organization's culture. Jane Hittman, National Program Manager for Creating Member Loyalty, or CML, a development strategy program from CUNA focused on increasing employee engagement and the member experience, says a culture built on strong values will promote passion among employees. When culture is done right, employees want to be in the right seat and they want to contribute, she says. Teamwork is another driver of culture, adds Paul Robert, CEO of FI Strategy, a strategic partner of CML. Finding people who bring their best every day is among the best way to inspire others. In this interview, Hittman and Robert share insight on how finding the right role for people is nothing short of transformative in creating a culture of accountability in leadership throughout an organization. Paul, let's start at the beginning. We're not going to talk today about how to get the right person, but understanding the concept is important to understanding how to best invest in your people, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, Ron. You know, it was almost 20 years ago that Jim Collins came out with his book, Good to Great, and all of us started talking about getting the right people in the right seats on the bus, right? It kind of made disciples of us all. It's a great approach, and it's something that we all need to focus on, but it's hard. I mean, there are a lot of challenges to getting the right people in the right seats. Specifically, there are three distinct challenges. Number one, wading through all those applications and conducting all those screenings and interviews and re-interviews, that's hard work. And that takes a lot of effort, a lot of time. You know, there's a reason why organizations charge a lot of money to do that for us, because it's hard and it takes a lot of work. So let's accept that point, first of all. Secondly, figuring out which is the best seat for someone can be daunting, because so many times the roles in our organizations have multiple demands. You know, I think about like a universal employee role, for instance. One day they could be being a teller and playing a teller role. And the next day they could be playing a loan officer and doing loan applications. And the next day they might be doing new accounts. And the next day they might be a problem solving. That's a broad spectrum, and that makes it really hard to get the right people in those roles. Branch managers are the same way. Even loan officers in a credit union where they're doing everything from application to closing, that's challenging as well. So it's a great concept, but it's hard to fulfill on. Another reason is sometimes, maybe too often, we have the wrong people in the role already, and they're blocking the right person from going into that role. And we need to look at keeping that person in the wrong role. What are the ramifications of that? We see this sometimes in a branch manager position. They've been a manager since the beginning of time, and we don't want to move them out, but we've got two, three other people who would make great branch managers. There's just no room for them. So it's hard, it's really challenging, but studies show that highly successful organizations with highly engaged employee cultures, they do this. They get people in the right roles, they get them in the right environment, they give them the right level of coaching and development, they make them feel valued, but it all starts with that fit and making sure that we get the right people in those roles. Jane, what do you see from the HR side? I mean, you've dealt with this a lot. What are you seeing from that standpoint?
I think it's essential, because your business is only as good as your people. And that goes from the front desk to the CEO's office. You know, every employee represents a facet of the credit union to your members and many times to the community at large. So hiring that wrong person can really cost the credit union way more than just the cost of that person. And, you know, listening to everything that you laid out there, it really kind of made me tired and stressed out. I do want to talk about the importance of a partnership between the hiring manager and the recruiter from HR. They have to get together and say, what are the qualities, skill sets, knowledge, characteristics that the new hire needs to have, not only for the job, but to fit our team? Whatever that verbiage is, that's what we want to focus on for that marketing piece, because it's going to be key to engagement, to catch their attention with something that really is enticing to those top performers out there. And I think in some cases, and I don't want this to sound negative towards HR, but I think many times HR gets into a rut and they have a procedure they use for pretty much every position. And I don't think that applies anymore. I think they have to be really focused on what are we looking for this position? And then what are the questions I need to ask to uncover these? If they use some sort of testing process, what's the testing process that we use and how does that uncover specifically what we're looking for this role? And from all the credit unions we've talked to this year, I don't think anybody's doing the exact job they did last year, taking on extra roles or they've been moved into a different position. So this might be a perfect opportunity to start working on this particular process. Many times credit unions will hire somebody who has the experience in this role from another institution of some sort. And man, I'm just going to say, stay away from that. That person may be a great person and, you know, do all the things to look for the characteristics, but don't just think because they did this role at another institution, they're going to be a fit for your institution. It might be a disaster in the big scheme of things.
I'm glad Paul mentioned culture and the environment, because your people are really what your culture and environment are. Can you kind of explain what that means exactly?
You know, the first thing I'll say, Ron, is the culture has to be geared to the credit union. You got to have your own culture. You can't adopt somebody else's. But when I think about culture, two things immediately come to mind. The first is passion, and the second is teamwork or working together, if you will. I've really come to believe just within the last handful of years that passion is critical for success. You know, we've always thought that it's about discipline and production and performance, and that's always going to be important. But I think today, more so than ever, an integral part of every culture needs to be a passion for what we're doing, a passion for your job, a passion for helping members, a passion for working together as a team and for living the credit union's mission. You know, I think that all has to be really significant. I think it's important with a younger generation today. So as we try to attract younger employees, they're looking for a culture that is high in passion. I think it's also significant in the pandemic time that we're living in, where people are kind of reevaluating the purpose of what they're doing and the purpose of work and so forth. The credit union has to demonstrate, they have to show that passion is a real critical part of that. I have the opportunity to be working with a client that's a drug and alcohol treatment center. And boy, you talk about people that are passionate. They're passionate about saving lives. And it's palpable. I mean, you walk in there, you can feel it. You can just hear it in their voices. You can see it in their eyes. Wouldn't that be great if every credit union had employees like that, you know, that had that level of passion that the members felt it and heard it when they came in? So passion is a real critical piece to making a successful culture going forward.
Paul, speaking of passion, culture might be a passion of mine. And Ron, I'm glad you asked about culture, because when I think of what Paul and I do, we live and breathe culture. Not a day goes by that we're not talking about somebody's culture. I think one of the things that really stands out to me is that no matter what, everybody's got a culture. It may not be the culture you want, but you have a culture. So when I think of culture, it's our core. It's our operating values. It defines the way we behave within our organization and within our communities. We often hear when we're conducting a culture assessment from people, and they're like, help us define our culture, help us build a culture. And, you know, we kind of grin to ourselves, you already have a culture. We're going to help change your culture to what you're looking for. Credit unions have to be willing to be really honest about how did their culture get the way that it is, and what are we going to do about it? So there's two cultures that kind of stand out in my mind, and I've coined them with my own name. And one of those cultures is the blame culture. And that's where no one takes ownership and everybody points the finger at somebody else. Well, I didn't do it because they didn't do their part, or it's not our fault, it's their fault. And that culture, again, permeates everything. And it is the way we conduct our business. So let's be aware if that's our culture. The other one that I think is kind of funny is, and Paul and I talk about this all the time, is we've always done it this way culture. So if it's not broke, why should we fix it? If you have a culture with the passion that Paul has talked about, and you've got a culture that is built off of some really strong core values and operating principles, then you're going to attract top performers. They're going to want to be part of this plan. You're also going to have your top performers even engaging at a deeper level because they want to join in. They want to be a positive contributor to this. So ultimately, our goal has to be, those are our core values, but spend the time to say, how do we shape their perspective of our people, their daily behaviors, the language that they use to engage with each other and the members, so that we can have that culture that we're really looking for. So again, thinking about people getting on the right seat, hey, when culture is done right, people want to be in the right seat. They want to contribute, and the credit union will function at a higher level.
One thing you said, you think of the team or teammates. What do you see there that makes it so important?
Teamwork is another key driver of engagement, Ron. You know, when we do engagement studies for our clients, this is an area that we focus real heavily on because it's taken on such a high level of importance. In our surveys, we ask about coworkers being friendly and helpful and so forth. And usually the credit union scores pretty high in those. But then when we come on site and we do the focus groups and we get one-on-one with people and we talk to them about their coworkers being motivating and inspiring and helping them go to that next level and so forth, it's a lot less positive. Their responses are a lot less positive. So it's almost like they can tolerate their coworkers day in and day out, but they can't really count on them to help them be successful and go to that next level. I think a lot like what we said about getting the right people, this takes work, but it's really rewarding. Finding people who, you know, are motivating and inspirational and how they do things and what they do, and then put them in positions where they can influence others. That has a great multiplying effect. It really can be transformative to an organization to get those people in roles of influence. And that includes, by the way, getting them into manager positions and leadership positions. I don't care if they've been there for 6 weeks. I don't care if they've never been a manager before. If they can motivate, if they can inspire their teammates and others in the organization, we've got to invest in them. We've got to get them in a position where that can have a huge impact on the organization. Jane, what do you think about that? I know you've looked at the teamwork idea a lot. What have you seen?
That feeling that you get when you're part of a great team, you know it. It's like, it's almost like joyful. You know, there's that sense of trust. There's an ease in how you engage with each other. High fives all around and high energy. And it's so powerful when a team is functioning at that level, and it really permeates everything that they touch. And man, I strive to be part of teams like that. So that's kind of what I use as my foundation when I'm thinking about teams. And I go back to years ago, I heard Joe Montana speak. Joe Montana was the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers back in the day. And one of the things he said, it was very contrary to all the posters that we saw on the walls in our leader's office that said, there is no I in team. Joe said, there is an I in team. And what he meant by that was that if you bring your I, if you bring your best, you really are a top contributor. If we rely on our mediocre behavior and team pulling us through, well, that's kind of the there is no I in team. He was like, if Ronnie Lott and Jerry Rice didn't bring their I game to every practice and every game, well, they wouldn't have been champions. They wouldn't have won as many games as they did. If I bring my I and Paul brings his I, anybody else we're working with, they have to up their game to kind of fit into that. And so you see that strength start to grow throughout the team. Again, talking about high performers, we can't lose sight that top performers need, they have a need to work with other high performers.
Kind of getting back to the people factor, we've all heard the saying that people don't leave jobs, they leave their boss. How does the role of managers and supervisors factor into this? And more practically, what should a manager and a supervisor do to keep their good employees?
I think about this from a kind of a pragmatic standpoint. I hear from managers all the time, I really care about my employees. And I believe that 100% that they are sincere when they say that. But I think really at the end of the day, what they care about is more about the employee's performance. So they care about helping the employee be successful in their job, and that's important. They care about the team being successful and ultimately the credit union being successful. All of those things are important, but where the manager or the supervisor can really make a difference, Ron, in the culture like we're talking about here, is when they care about the employee at an individual level. And I think there's three things that every manager or supervisor has to know about their employees. Number one, what motivates this employee? Number two, how do they like to receive feedback and coaching and communication? And number three, where does this person want to be in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, so forth? And don't make assumptions on any of those. You got to really know it. Sit down with each employee, answer these questions together. If it's a new hire, make it part of day one. Have this conversation with them. If it's a employee that, you know, has been there for a while, take them to lunch or something and talk through it together. And then in both cases, revisit this ongoing. That's how a manager and a supervisor can show that they really care about their employee by tailoring the approach directly to them. Now, after you know the answers to those three questions, then obviously you got to do something about it, right? You got to create motivational systems that they value. You got to communicate to them in a way that they appreciate. You have to create a development plan that's going to truly make them better as a person, as an employee, and so forth. So I think really showing that you care about your employees should be the top priority for managers and supervisors. Jane, we did that podcast on empathy a little while ago. This kind of ties into that, doesn't it?
You know, it does in the sense that, you know, empathy is such a relationship builder. And I'm going to go in a little different direction, though, but I'm always here to talk about empathy. The right people, those top performers that we're referring to, will respond to leaders and influencers who motivate and inspire, what you just said. So I think, and I'm going to up you in three things and kind of drill down and clarify, I guess. So one of the top things that I think is important is to have really clear job expectations. People have to know what's expected of them. And so often people rely on a job description, or they just rely that, oh, the person is here, so they must know their job. I can't tell you how many people, and Paul, you can second this, that we talk to that really are surprised at their annual reviews that they were supposed to be doing something all year because it was never articulated to them. To ensure that your staff really understands things, you have to have a plan. They have to know what to achieve, how it's going to be measured so they can track that. Think about it in how do I help my people win? Because top performers wake up every morning wanting to win. They don't just come in going, hey, what's going to happen today? No, they already have a plan. And coach, provide feedback, have quality conversations with people. I can't tell you how often we hear from people that they'll say, yeah, I coach my people. And then when we ask for an example, it was not coaching. I don't even know what it was, but it wasn't motivating. It wasn't inspiring. It didn't help people understand what to do more of and even what to do less of. Good coaching doesn't come natural to a lot of people. It's hard work to be a good coach. You have to be intentional and very pointed about it. Is it worth it? Yeah. Is it worth it to take the time to up your game and to really learn what it takes? Yes. And I say do it because it will benefit you in all aspects of your life. And, you know, lastly, I think equipping your team. And to Paul talking about the new hires, sometimes we train them on the system and then we leave out how to have a conversation, or maybe it's vice versa. There's a full package. So I think, yes, we train on system. We train on policies, procedures, service excellence, relationship development, whatever it is that is important to them being able to do their job. We can't say, well, I don't have time to coach them, or we can't spare them off of the job. We have to commit to these people. Well, if we expect them to be top performers, we have to commit to them. And again, if we want to attract top performers from other organizations, they have to know that there's a plan in place for their development, their ongoing development. And I think if we fail to invest in our people, it's going to show, and our top performers then will start, you know, peeking their nose over the fence looking for that greener grass on the other side. Ron, I'll finish this section with a comment that I heard that I think is applicable here. So, you know, a chief once said to me that my top performers, they think they're prima donnas. They expect more than are my lower performers. And my response was, and still is today, and your point is, because yes, our top performers do expect more. That's how they got to be top performers. So don't miss the opportunity to provide them that place to be a top performer. They crave quality leadership and relevant technology. And I think they're worth every bit of it.
So once you get those right people, how do you make sure you keep them, or at least keep them engaged and happy and productive?
I'll start off here with something Paul said before. Get to know your people. Spend that time to really know them. You don't know what motivates people until you ask them or you see them respond. Everyone is motivated differently. And again, because managers function in such a demanding world, they're going in a million different directions. Their plate's overflowing. I get that. But what they tend to do, rather than taking the time to talk to people, is to try to motivate people with what motivates them. That can be a real miss. And I think back to a manager I had several years back. She loved the activity of let's all get together and hash out and rehash an issue that happened. Come up with a solution, and then we'll test that solution. Then we'll rehash it again before we ever make it happen. And oh my gosh, I cringe just saying that, because that was like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. I'm the kind of person that's like, let's talk about it. Let's make it happen. Let's do this thing. I'm like, ain't nobody got time for hours and hours of rehashing. But that manager thought she was doing something good. She thought she was motivating us by allowing us to, you know, be engaged at this level. So motivating, my first thing, get to know people, how to motivate them, what motivates them, and then stick to that with each individual. Secondly, I'll say to develop a system of recognizing and rewarding people. The goal is to ensure that your top performers continue to demonstrate these top performing skills that they have. So I truly believe that recognizing them does a couple of things. It helps to ensure that they continue with that positive behavior, whatever it is. But it also spotlights that behavior so that others on the team can see it and go, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. So then they can duplicate it. So I think there's a lot of power in recognizing. Rewarding is a whole nother thing, but we have to find out what people want. I hear most often, and Paul, I know you'll second this, let's give them a Starbucks card. Okay, I don't mind a free coffee now and then, but you know what? That's not motivating anymore. It has to be something that really is more relevant. And that might be that I get to work with a good team. That might be that I get the privilege of working on a project that in the past I haven't been able to. I think it's also important to ask some really good questions of the managers. And some that I use in just getting their wheels turning are, you know, how are you recognizing the key behaviors in your top performers? What do you build into your day to ensure you have the opportunity to see your top performers? And then one that I kind of throw in as a wrench is, are you rewarding your poor performers by not holding them accountable? Because that's super dangerous. And when you praise people, are you being really specific on those behaviors that you want to see duplicated? I think ignoring the real positive behaviors is more dangerous than almost not recognizing. But I think it really has to be a balance of it. Top performers want to work with like-minded people. When top performers are surrounded by low performers, they will start to think about leaving in search of a better work environment. And if they stay, their output will lower. That's for sure.
If you were CEO of a credit union and you could go do one thing to make sure you kept all your best employees, what would it be? Jane, why don't you go first?
Kind of sticking with the theme that we've had here, I think it's critical for CEOs to actually know who their top performers are. You might have an organization of 1,000 people, and that sounds really daunting. And I've heard some CEOs or the C-suite say, that's my manager's role. And yeah, I agree. It is your manager's role. But wow, how powerful is it to actually know who my top performers are, know what they're doing that makes them a top performer, and being the one to acknowledge and reward and recognize them. I think it's critical and it's really exciting to be part of an organization like that, because that, again, starts to permeate the culture and establish the behaviors that all leaders should be demonstrating.
And Jane, I'll piggyback onto that, because I think not only should you know your top performers, I think you should, as a credit union, I would want to heavily invest in all of my employees, but especially those top performers, because I need to keep those folks. Not only do I need to keep them doing what they're doing, I need to get them to go to an even higher level, you know? So I would invest in their development. It was interesting, just within the last few days, there's been a story out circulating about the best credit unions to work for. And it was amazing to me, as you read each one of those credit unions, there was three or four bullet points as to what each one did, how many of those credit unions invest in their employees. They have specific development plans for their employees. That should tell us that our employees want that. They value that. They need that going forward. So I think showing them that we care about them and their development is something, Ron, that I would invest heavily in, because then I'd have a roster full of superstars, and then we could really have a transformative culture and experience at our credit union.
Thanks for listening to the CUNA News Podcast. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play.